Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We're your hosts for this week's show, Greta Anderson
and Sarah Hegland. Today on Local Talk, we speak with two local artists. Or are they craftspeople?
We could call them makers,
alchemists,
composers,
creators.
Kristen Roach is the founder of Ames Collaborative Art, or Ames CART. It's a group of young makers in the community who create public art projects for everyone to get involved in. Things like murals, workshops, and street art.
Then we turn to an individual maker in our community, Amanda Feely, a natural perfume maker who composes music for the nose.
That sounds really indie.
It is indie. Wait, what's indie?
It's in step with today's independent craft movement, as Kristen explained it to me.
Cool. Let's listen to that interview.
This is Greta Anderson from Local Talk, and I'm here with Kristen Roach, the founder of Ames CART, which stands for Ames Collaborative Art, but it does have a little cart as its logo. I always imagine art being taken through the streets of Ames in the little cart. But what is it really that you do, Kristen?
Well, that's pretty much it. It's mobile. It's on the move. We try to work with a lot of different organizations, spaces, artists, makers, people unrelated to the arts to make interesting, interactive projects happen in Ames.
How long ago did you start this?
It was started in 2009 as kind of a loosely affiliated band of creative people. And then in March of 2010, we became an official Iowa not-for-profit incorporation.
So can you give me some specific examples of things that you've done?
Well, I think the biggest ones to point to are probably our annual projects that we do. Our first annual project was the mural in Campus Town that's located on the corner of Welch and Chamberlain. And then the following year, we did the Art Vend machine that's located at Wheatsfield Co-op. And the Art Vend is literally a snack vending machine that's been retrofitted, changed up a little bit, redesigned, and it's filled with art and craft from regional makers. And then most recently, in 2012 and then kind of overlapping into 2013, was our modular mural project where we have 84 panel pieces from local creative types, both art and craft, ranging in age from, I think our youngest participant was probably 4 and our oldest was elderly, we could say, retired. And they all came together into a large installation on a wall, so all the 84 pieces combined make up a mural, and that's located in the foyer of the Octagon Center for the Arts. Painted, paper processes, quilting, one's actually embroidered, some are drawn, some are collaged. We opened it up to all media methods. It wasn't something to be just for artists, it was to be for anyone who was creative and wanted to help make a piece of art. And I think that's, in general, what our mission is that while not everyone is an artist, everyone can participate and find value in the arts. And so with the Campus Town mural that we did, for instance, it was all paint, of course, but we actually designed it so it was paint by numbers. So it was another project where it was a big art project, but you didn't have to be an artist to participate in making that art project. Again, we had kids ranging from like 5 all the way up to 74 come out, and we had professional artists and painters come and help, but we also had the firemen from across the street came out and helped paint it, which is really exciting. And we really just want to show people that they can really participate in the arts in a meaningful way, and it can bring value into their lives in a way other activities maybe can't. And it brings value to the community, too. Not to boast, but Campus Town looks a whole lot better with a big, colorful mural on that wall instead of kind of a flaky, white-painted concrete wall.
What street is that on?
Chamberlain and Welch, right on the corner.
So how does the Ames CART community kind of sustain itself, keep itself going? There's Creative Collision.
Creative Collision was our monthly get-together. And we just met at coffee shops or the Space for Ames from time to time, and people were encouraged to bring a portable project to work on, and it was just a way to kind of get together and meet other creative people in the area, other artists and craftspeople. And right now we're actually in a little bit of a flux. We are going to start hosting a Ames cart. We jokingly started calling it the soiree, or basically a place for us all to kind of physically get together and hash out ideas and maybe make things together. We're not exactly sure what's going to happen with it, which it's actually a great time to start coming, because we really want to open it up. Up until now, it's kind of been a core group of about 6 volunteers, including myself, who have really led the direction, like what the annual projects are going to be and that kind of thing. And we really want to open that up and get more of a cooperative membership happening, where anyone from the community should feel like they can come to an Ames Cart meeting, get their hands dirty, and help make decisions about what we're doing a couple months from now or a couple years from now. You know, you come and you have this idea that you want to make happen, and maybe we don't have the funds to make it happen, but we have the ideas and the passion, and or maybe we know someone who has the resource that you need.
You certainly know how to spread the word. How many people worked on, for instance, the murals?
The first one was about 54. The vending machine, we've had about 35 people kind of come and go. And then the modular mural, I think there ended up being 84 pieces. But yeah, I mean, we definitely try our best. And we're really open to all kinds of crazy ideas. If you think, oh, this is too crazy to pursue, well, you know, you should just come and see if maybe we could help you out with it.
Have you thought about yarn bombing the downtown?
Yeah, actually, it was kind of a scheduling issue that happened, where we were hoping to partner with the MU workspace because they were hosting essentially a yarn bomb workshop, and we wanted to so bad. And it turned out that every single board member and every single dedicated volunteer, because we have quite a few volunteers that are just really committed, none of us could work out that weekend, which was so disappointing. But yeah, we've definitely thought about that. It's a really fun thing.
For those in the audience who might not know, yarn bombing is a kind of graffiti where crocheters and knitters go around and do their thing around fences, trees, parking meters, that type of thing.
It's kind of a fairly eco-friendly way of splashing some color around.
You mentioned the MU.
The Memorial Union Workspace. Actually, one of the first ongoing series of workshops we hosted was, we called them sew and swaps, and you could bring materials. We kind of facilitated a project each time, and it was once a month on Saturdays at the workspace, and you could kind of come ask your questions. We had a sewing expert there, and swap materials around, get rid of some stuff you don't want, take on some stuff you do want. That was really fun. We're in close contact with them anyway, just because they're doing some really innovative workshops right now that I think a lot of the people who come to Ames Cart are also interested in those. They tend to be doing a lot of indie craft things.
You have a blog, right?
Yeah, it's on amescart.org, amescart.org. Yeah, we have this really great member, Tibby Chelsea, and he's been going around to local exhibits and photographing all the art projects and all the anything he can get under his camera and posting it as kind of roundups on the website of kind of look at what's happening in Ames as far as art goes, which is really exciting.
It is.
That he's taken that on. And that's another thing. You know, we had kind of talked about doing something like that, but no one was really committed to the idea. And he's like, we need to do this. And so he just made it happen. And
presumably, you're going to have a project for 2014 or 13?
Yeah. So, looking to the future, while the monthly meetup is in flux a little bit, we are having plans to do another plein air painting series again. It started last summer. Lindsay Nissen hosted, and it starts with a workshop the first week, and then it runs every other week for the course of the summer, and we meet out at Ada Hayden. So the first session is a workshop, and then every session after that is an open session where you just come and gather and all paint outside together. It's really fun. Lindsay is an amazing plein air painter, and you can kind of play with oils. We actually provide the paint and canvases and painting boards. You just have to bring your own brushes and jars for medium. So it's a pretty good deal. And that's one of the things is we really try to keep things, cost of materials, or if we're hiring an instructor, to pay them, and then that's it. Our budget is always kind of balanced to zero. All the pricing and things will be posted on the website as well as Facebook once the event is slated to happen and gets officially scheduled. And then coming up later in the year, we've talked often about for our next annual project is to kind of do something different. I guess we always seem to do something a little different each year. But we've been tentatively planning to do a series of pop-up shows where it would kind of be an up and down exhibit in an impromptu space and, you know, one night only kind of thing. Maybe do one or two of them before the year's end.
Kind of like a flash mob with art.
I'm not exactly sure. That's definitely been one of the ideas that was put around. But I think something with a little bit more promotion, just because of the static nature of an exhibit and the pre-planning that would need to happen for the space to actually hang things. But it's looking to be a pretty exciting little venture. And Tibby, he's the one who's kind of heading up that project. He's done something similar before in Nashville with another arts organization he was involved with back then. So he's kind of bringing that project out here.
I noticed that you've been using the word makers mm-hmm. as opposed to artist or craftsperson.
We really feel that maker is a good way of bridging that gap, because while we are an arts group and we have a lot of artists, we also have a lot of craftspeople or artisans or people who are just, you know, want to get involved in the arts and are maybe in a completely unrelated field. And so really a maker is anyone who makes things, a creative type, you could call them. We didn't want to have to keep repeating artists and crafters like a million times. And we're like, let's just say makers. And that was the main point, is especially with like the vending machine. It didn't matter if you were doing little paintings or if you were doing, for instance, we have another girl who does sewn patchwork clutches. And that distinction for this particular project didn't matter so much. And so it's just any makers out there, anyone. And it's a more common term, too, in the indie craft community on the East and West Coast. Like, there's the Maker Fair that's put on by Make Magazine. And it's kind of become its own definition, I guess. And some makers are artists and some are crafters. But what they have in common is that they both make things.
There is kind of a movement, isn't there?
Yeah.
Toward making, crafting. Can you talk a bit about that?
Do you really want to ask me about that? Because it's one of my favorite topics.
Oh, well, no. Please don't talk about it.
On a side note, I'm actually really fascinated by art history. And one of the topics that piqued my curiosity the most was this kind of dialogue that happens between art and craft and the contemporary indie crafts movement. Because, yeah, it really does seem like just how everything's a cycle. We've come back and almost hit this Renaissance time again, where it's this period of self-discovery and really finding value in making things with our hands, even though it's not always cost-effective, honestly. I was pricing out curtains the other day, and I was like, you know, should I make my own curtains? It is cheaper and a lot less time intensive to go to a department store and buy a set of curtains than to purchase the 8 yards of fabric that would be required. But I'm still kind of thinking I want to make them, because there's just that quality of it and the experience of it. And I keep saying the word value, but it's an appropriate word, I feel, for it. The value that's added into my home and my life just by the process of making something tangible, even in my job, which I love so much. Oftentimes, it's a lot of work that at the end of the day, I don't really have a physical thing to say, I made this. And I think it's not just me that misses that. It's a lot of people. And that's why more and more we're turning to things like maybe taking a watercolor workshop or maybe taking a class on knitting. Because it's not that it's easier or faster or more cost effective to knit your own sweaters. It's that you knit that sweater, and how amazing is that? Or you made that watercolor painting, And how beautiful is that? And how much does that enhance your life?
I'm assuming that the previous touchstone for this moment in history would be the early 70s with the Foxfire movement. And and in that case, the movement toward craft, it seemed a political, social movement. And now, from what you describe, it sounds like a kind of a reaction to the abstractness that maybe the age of computers and computer-aided communication
is. The age of service-oriented employment. You know, really, that most people's jobs are service industries in some form or another. My husband, he writes code all day, and he loves his job, you know, the math behind it. But when it comes down to it, he also loves to tinker and build things and construct physicality, I think, is the thing that's kind of missing oftentimes in people's life, is why it's so fulfilling in some ways to bake a loaf of bread versus just going and getting a delicious loaf of bread.
Where do your passions lie as far as medium?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm definitely a mixed media artist. And I've recently started working in junk mail. Like, I know that sounds crazy, but I'm really obsessed with junk mail and making these beautiful objects out of it and where it comes from and where it's going. And so it's been papermaking and quilling and drawing and painting with it. And technically speaking, my training is in oil painting, and then I have a pretty extensive background in craft. It's a craft pattern writer.
I think you also sew?
Yeah, I actually wrote a book on mending called Mend It Better.
Again, encouraging people to have their hands on the problem. If you just thread your needle.
Grab your needle and go. Yeah, hand mending is still my favorite out of all the, you know, using a machine and anything else. I really like using just a needle and thread. Yeah, I mean, I would say my passion's more, it's not so much a media or method. It's really community art, inspiring people, getting people to think about things in a different way, I would say is more what it's about for me than any particular sewing or oil painting. When I started AmesCart back in 2009, 2010, my concept, I guess you could call it, was getting to people to participate in the arts who maybe felt they weren't artists. So for me and for AmesCart, it's kind of been about not so much what media is being used, but more the experience people are getting out of it. And that's why we went with the name Ames Collaborative Art, was we really wanted to draw people together in a new way that wasn't happening.
You're part of a group, you mentioned the Ames Progressive, and a lot of creative energy has...
The Space for Ames.
And the Space for Ames. It seems like a lot of creative energy in Ames has come from the Space for Ames and the Ames Progressive. Could you talk about that a little?
I wish I had Nate Logsdon here.
How did you all find each other?
Yeah, I guess that's where I was going to start, is it was really serendipitous. I had been affiliated with this group back in Chicago called the Sewing Rebellion. And we did a series of workshops and performance art pieces based around the concept of sewing and kind of assembly line sewing and being disconnected from the process of clothing making, something that we all kind of wear and use every day. And I was encouraged by the founder of that group to start a local chapter. And so I had just been asking around about where I could make this project happen. I had just moved to Ames. This was about 5 years ago, I guess. And a friend that I worked with was like, well, you should talk to this guy, Nate, I know. And they have this thing called the Ames Progressive. We talked and he was like, oh, yeah, sure. Come and teach sewing workshops, whatever. Yeah, great. And rent free. You know, bring your own supplies. I'll let you in. That was kind of the thing. And that's how I initially met him. And then slowly he pulled me on to helping out with the publication for about a year span. And then from there, we kind of grew and expanded and started hosting other types of workshops outside of sewing. I had been hauling 2 sewing machines and all these supplies and tables to the space for Ames like once a month. It was such a pain in some ways. It was awesome. And so when Letitia offered to use the workspace for these sew-in swaps is what they eventually became once Ames Cart formed and we were doing more than just sewing. She actually had sewing machines in this big table and I was like, oh, this is awesome. And Nate was really so supportive. He's like, oh, this is great. I'm so glad that we could help get you started and kind of this push. And for me, I think that's what he has done is it's almost more like not being so concerned about who has ownership of a project, but just that it happens, which I've tried to embrace that as well. And I guess that's what I was trying to communicate earlier when I was like, just come with your idea, with your thing you're passionate about and sound it off us and we'll try to help you with it or become a member of Ames Cart and just make it happen as an Ames Cart project. That's really what it's all about. It's been really excited to see the open nature of the Ames community. I've lived a couple different places now, and I have to say this has been one of the most welcoming, embracing places I've ever lived. And I mean, my husband and I, we actually don't have to live here. He works from a home office and can kind of take his job wherever. Up until November, I was also self-employed as a full-time artist and writer, but we just like it so much. Where else can you go start your own arts organization, paint these big murals, get people involved, do other crazy projects, paint outside, and then get hired on as the exhibits manager at an art center? That's amazing. And the Octagon has really embraced that spirit, has been so good about helping facilitate projects and support artists and taking a big chance on me as someone who I have a lot of experience now, but I don't have any specific things that say, yes, curator, that makes sense. And now they're just being really great about being open to all my schemes that I want to bring into that space. And so that's been really fun. How much they've embraced that kind of, I guess, spirit that you were talking about earlier.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Kristen, for talking with me.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. You just heard an interview with Kristen Roach, founder of Ames Collaborative Art, or Ames Cart, a group that brings people together to make art in Ames.
Imagination is funny. It makes a cloudy day sunny. Makes the bees think of honey, just as I think of you. Imagination is crazy. Your whole perspective gets hazy. Start you asking a daisy what to do. What? wanting you. And yet I can't imagine that you want me.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Our next guest, Amanda Feely, uses her imagination as a maker of natural perfumes. As she tells us in the interview, her profession dates back to the ancient Egyptians.
She thinks of her work as a kind of alchemy.
You know, how they were always trying to find that, turn the lead into gold. It seems sort of like that to me in some ways.
Amanda actually studied music in college and planned on being a professional opera singer.
That's what I was going to do, was be an opera singer. You know, I was going to travel all over the world. And I think it's John Lennon who said, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. So I met my husband and fell in love and got married and had kids, twins and a toddler.
Some people in the community may recall Amanda and her family went through quite an ordeal a few years ago with her husband, Kevin, nearly dying from cancer. Her whole life at that time was focused on his survival. Thankfully, Kevin's been cancer-free for 5 years.
In fact, it was Kevin's idea for her to get into perfume in the first place. It was his gift when he was still in recovery that got her started. Let's listen.
He was at home recovering, and I was doing my best to kind of bring him back into the world of the living as opposed to just trying not to die. And I got him interested in reading blogs. You know, I thought that's something he can do from his hospital bed. And, you know, it's something that would engage him. But he started reading a lot of, like, indie blogs and, like, Maker Magazine and Do It Yourself, you know, all this stuff. And one of them just happened to have an interview with an independent perfumer, and this was around, it was 2008, and she had a do-it-yourself kit, and he said, would you like that for your birthday? And I said, oh yeah, I would love that, actually. And then I thought, I remember kind of like resisting a little bit, because like, oh, I don't, you know, you shouldn't be getting me anything frivolous. And he's like, honey, it's been a rough year, you need to, we'll make it for your Christmas too. He spent 8 months in the hospital. He was bedbound. He nearly died 5 times. You know, I had emergency surgery a couple of times. And it was a really, really bad part of our lives. It was a really, really tricky, hard part of our lives. I don't know, I just was kind of enchanted at the idea of making your own perfume, like mixing it up and making the formula and putting it in the bottle, and then you have to wait and like see what happens.
But so how long do you wait for?
Well, depending on what's in it, about a month at bare minimum. Some things I have, it takes 6 months really for it to properly age. It's kind of like making wine. I don't know, it just seemed like magic to me, like alchemy, you know, like how they were always trying to find that, turn the lead into gold. It seems sort of like that to me in some ways. You're turning something, separate things, not maybe as of much value, into something of great value because you've made this beautiful thing. So I, you know, got it, mixed it up, waited, and turned out pretty good. And I thought, oh, that was fun, you know. I ordered another one. So then I just got really intrigued by this, and I started researching on the internet and stumbled upon natural perfumery. Natural perfuming really intrigued me. The fact that you would use only essential oils, only raw botanicals, only a resin, all of these things that have been used for thousands of years. Because this is what perfumery was up until about the mid-1920s. There was no such thing as a natural perfumer. All the great French houses that you think about, Guerlain, Hobegon, even Chanel, Dior, all of these houses, this is how they did things. when you talk about something like sandalwood. I don't know if you remember reading in the Shakespeare play about Cleopatra and Mark Antony. She scents her barge, her sails, with sandalwood oil, and then she sails down the Nile to meet Mark Antony. Because she really wasn't a great beauty, she just knew how to present herself. Anyway, so that was really intriguing to me that, you know, I would be using this substance that had been used in ancient Egypt, or in Persia, or in Greek and Roman times, all of these things. You know, it seemed to me like the building blocks of the art form. I read this, found this book called Essence and Alchemy. It's by a lady named Mandy Aftel. As I said, I was a music major, classically trained musician, sang opera. I took music theory, I had to take orchestration, counterpoint. And counterpoint is a very strict musical form. There are very strict rules that you have to follow if you're writing counterpoint. You can only do certain things at certain times. You can only use certain types of chords or notes to do what you want to do. So I stumbled upon this book, Essence and Alchemy. She got about two-thirds of the way through the book, and I was just enchanted the whole way through. You know, she puts a picture in there. It's this chart of music, grand music staff, and it was this thing that a English perfumer from the 18th century, he had developed. His name was Septimus Piace. He called it an odophone. And what it was a grand music staff with notes from the lowest bass note to the highest treble clef note. Not only music notes, he had perfuming notes. So it was like sandalwood, frankincense, lilac, jasmine, bergamot. And it was my light bulb moment of bing! And I was like, I already know how to do this. And so I just started ordering oils, essential oils from reputable suppliers. You know, she kindly provided a list in the back of the book. If you want to start blending your own, here are some places to get you started. I joined a couple of natural perfume groups. And then 2009, my husband went to work. I just started mixing things up. I have this wheel, perfumer's wheel. It's like an artist's wheel in that it's got colors on it, but all of the notes, I mean, this isn't everything, but this is a good chunk of a natural perfumer's palette. And it's got families. Like, here's the woody family, and then it's broken down into subcategories. Like, there's floral woodies, and then there's sweet woodies, and there's the floral family. So when I'm composing perfume, I want to build a heart chord, which is the middle chords. So there's top notes, middle notes, and bass notes. And then you put these together and they're called chords. So your top chord, your middle chord, and your bass chord. Sometimes they're called heart notes. The top notes are the most volatile. They evaporate the quickest. So as you can see here, there's a lot of citrus and spices, some mints, some of the mint family, wormwood and spearmint, wintergreen, herbs, spices, you know.
So when you put them on, those disappear the fastest?
Those are the things you smell first, and they evaporate the quickest. And then you get the middle notes. You can see there's a lot of flowers on here. There's some more spices. There's beeswax, another one. Now, thing is, your nose. The left nostril and the right nostril go to different parts of your brain, so they smell differently. They smell different things. So now when I give you these, you don't want to just go like that. You want to pass it back and forth under your nose, and you want to kind of like a dog. So you want to waft, not draft. All right, now, here is an English lavender essential oil. Depending on where the plant is grown, you get a different scent profile. So I have multiple lavender oils because, like, the English lavender is, when you think about lavender, you really think about English lavender. And this isn't used as much anymore, but I really like it because it's very delicate and sweet. It's not so harsh and herbally.
It's interesting. Yeah.
It's a lot
more complex.
It's very complex. It's the absolute. It's the lavender
sweet.
Absolute. Yeah. this is a middle note, but it's still lavender, but it's just a different... Depends on the part of the distillation process that it comes from. Okay. Like, if it comes from the beginning, you get the essential oil at the beginning, and then you get the absolute, which comes in the middle. Also, sometimes it depends on what they extract with. If it's, like, using a copper still, sometimes they use different compounds to extract from the plant what they want. So for rose has over 200 different scent molecules in it. Corporate perfume houses, which is what you find mass-produced, you know, if, like, you go into Target or you go into Yonkers or Nordstrom's or whatever... None of those perfumes have any essential oils in them anymore. They're all synthetic compounds, none of which have been tested for long-term use on human body. Mm-hmm. So we are the guinea pigs. And actually finding some of these compounds, studies have been done. They're hormone disruptors, can cause cancer. I mean, so you look at something like a natural perfume, these things have been used for thousands of years. They were originally offerings to the gods. That's what perfume was. Parfum means through smoke. It was only the realm of the priests because it was the sacred thing. So when you smell a mass-produced perfume, a synthetics, they go in and they isolate one of those compounds and they replicate it. So they call that rose. But it's a very flat and linear olfactory experience. Whereas... when you use the essential oil or the absolute, you're getting all of those. So it's a very rich and broad and vertical olfactory experience. Now I'm going to give you, I use rose always because when you smell rose oil, it's floral, but it's fruity and it's spicy and it's green. It's all of these things. It's not just... one thing. Inevitably, I get people like, don't give me any florals. I hate florals. And then I have them smell it. I'm like, what is that? I'm like, it's rose.
Wow.
You just never smelled the real thing before. You know?
That's amazing.
And then, like, sticking your head in a field of flowers.
Wow, it's so lovely.
Isn't it?
I don't want to stop smelling it.
I know. The great thing about the internet is it's sometimes called the great equalizer. If I had wanted to be a perfumer before the internet was around, you went to Grasse. You had to go study at the institute there, and Grasse is in France. Mm. That's where, you know, modern Western perfumery started. Catherine de' Medici, she was tired of the smell of her opera gloves for having the tannery smell, because... to tan leather, they would use things like urine and brains and animal fats, and it didn't smell very good, you know? So she wanted things to cover up that smell on her opera gloves, because she, I guess, couldn't enjoy the opera with the smell of her opera gloves being, like, rancid. So she started schools there. And Grasse has a very unique microclimate. A lot of things can grow there that can't grow, like, other places. You have to have a certain altitude, you have to have a certain soil, you know, so it was a very unique microclimate, so it could grow some of these things. So she started perfume schools there, and so before the internet, I mean, if you wanted to go study perfumery and be a perfumer, you went to France, you went to Grasse, and, you know, they, like, have you sweep the floors for 3 years before you even touch the beakers. It's a very rigorous and regimented process to go through, whereas before you would apprentice to the perfumer in your town. You know, it was mixed up in the pharmacies, because you would get these things in the pharmacy. They carried that stuff. But you would go and you would apprentice to someone. So the internet has kind of allowed that process to come back, where you apprentice to someone, you take a course of study, you learn yourself, you train your own nose, which is what I've done.
And sort of a subjective and, like, local and personal experience.
Exactly.
Like learning.
Exactly. As opposed to, like, this regimented, dry laboratory environment.
Top down.
You know, it's an art form. they aren't even made by people anymore. What they do is they go in, they're going to make a perfume in these perfume houses. They go in, they punch the formula into the computer. The robot formulates it and bottles it, and then off it goes. I mean, there's not even a human being involved. I do everything myself. I mean, it's like the guy who builds the carpenter, you know, he builds the rocking chairs from scratch, and it's like that, or like artisan winemakers, or, you know, the microbreweries. It's like that. It's part of that. Maybe we don't need corporate involvement in everything in our lives. Maybe having something small, handcrafted, locally owned is better. So I'm going to have you smell this jasmine. Absolute. This is the real stuff. It's a jasmine grandiflorum. It's Indian. Okay, so now I have this antique perfume, synthetic jasmine. You probably don't even need to open it.
What is antique?
It's just vintage.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's awful.
I know, isn't it?
Like, I can't believe it. I can't believe people are cheated out of
the, I know. They're like totally robbed.
This is so gross.
Oh, isn't it?
It's like aggressive and annoying.
Yeah. When you smell the person who's been in the elevator before you, that's this.
Wow.
Okay. It's just not even close. It's like this poor imitation.
Yeah.
It's like this sad little bottle of
like mold or something.
Yeah. It's an individual isolation compound that's replicated. And I mean, I don't know how old this is, but the nice thing about essential oils and these raw natural perfuming materials, they can actually improve with age, like wine.
Can you give me a few of the ones that you've mixed to smell, and we can talk about what were they for and how you put them together?
So my tagline is, I compose music for your nose, because I was a music major, so. This was the first one I did that was all natural. It's called Autumn Spice. And this one has actually been worn by Cameron Mannheim. She actually called me on the phone to thank me for the beautiful perfume.
Wow. That's interesting. It's autumnal.
Yeah. It's supposed to be like that crisp fall day, you know, the leaves are crunching under your feet, the weather is, you know, brisk, the air is brisk, the wind kind of carries that cold smell to it.
It's got a little coolness, it's a little cinnamon.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's really interesting.
I've got one, and it's Come to Me. It was a request from a customer. She says, have you heard of the love potion called Come to Me? I said, yeah, I've heard of it. It's like kind of a voodoo thing. And she's like, yeah, could you make something like that? And I said, yeah, I could. So I did some research, and parts of that one are based off of the Song of Solomon, where he talks about, like, I will give you rafters of cedar and boughs of fir, and my love's breasts smell like sandalwood and all. I mean, I read it and I put all that in there, and then I put some other things in there that are used in the Come to Me. And that's the love potion.
All right, so there's some sweetness in there.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the first one.
Yes, there's cinnamon in there. Damiana, bergamot. There's a Himalayan cedarwood, balsam fir. So you might get that.
Yeah.
Neroli, jasmine, lang lang,
jasmine,
tuberose, gardenia.
When a customer, they'll like read about this perfume, and then, I mean, it must be difficult to kind of match them up with what they're looking for.
It can be. I mean, it's not like. That's one of the challenges. I mean, the internet is really awesome. I mean, that's where I do most of my business.
Hmm.
But the thing about selling on the internet, and especially if when you're selling, I am selling bottled emotion. This is an ephemeral thing. Our sense of smell is our most powerful sense. most powerful scents that we have, because you can smell something and it will like that take you like, oh yeah, my first boyfriend smelled, wore this, or oh, I remember I used to go to grandpa and grandma's and they had the lilacs, and oh, you know, it just takes you right back there. It's like instant memory grabber. And I have one that it has evoked in a visceral emotional response in people. One of the cool things about natural perfumes to me is that they actually change on your skin as you wear them.
I want to ask you about this, because yes. I smelled these again after like 10 minutes and it's different.
Exactly. It's because you're starting to get the middle notes. Mm. But the top notes will last for about a half an hour-ish. Middle notes last anywhere from half an hour to an hour or two, and then you get the base notes coming in. Now, price. You can go in and buy a bottle of Britney Spears for like $20 or whatever, right? There's nothing real in there. It's all chemicals. Okay, so I will use jasmine and rose as an example. Natural perfume ingredients can be very labor intensive. With jasmine and rose, they have to be hand-picked. 8,000 blossoms. They have to be hand-picked. Gives 1 gram of absolute. That's the difference in price between a natural perfume and synthetic perfume. You're getting a piece of art for your skin. The really sad thing about the modern perfumery is that all of these houses, they've done what's called, if your bottle of Chanel No. 5 doesn't smell like you remember it smelling, that's because it isn't the same. Hmm. They've done what's called reformulation, where, and this is mainly in Europe, which is where all these perfume houses are, there's a body called IFRA, and it's the International Fragrance Regulatory Association or something like that. But what they've done is they say, people have allergies. Well, you can't use oak moss anymore because it might cause sensitivities. Okay. Well, okay, if you dump raw undiluted oak moss on your skin, of course you're going to get, it's like when they go in and they, this causes cancer. Well, you injected the rat with an isolated compound and you injected it with 2,000 times the amount of that you would ever get. Okay. Yeah. So what they have done is force all of these perfume companies to remake all of these classic iconic perfumes. Like, you can't use oak moss anymore. You have to use this synthetic version of oak moss without. So it's like they've ruined all of these beautiful, I mean, they've ruined all these perfumes. So like, yeah, if your perfume, like you've been wearing Chanel No. 5 for 40 years and you're like, it just doesn't smell like it used to. That's because it isn't the same thing.
What's the relationship between that phase of your life and this phase of your life?
Oh, it's changed me. I'm forever changed. I mean, I don't take anything for granted anymore. I am so grateful for each day. I'm grateful for everything that I have. You know, like just being able to sit down and eat a meal or being able to dress yourself. I appreciate everything. I appreciate what I have. I appreciate that I can do this. You know, I really try to, like, that's why I say when I sit down to compose a perfume, I put myself in this positive, loving, uplifting mindset of giving. And I really want to share that, you know, because I went through this time and I didn't always see the glasses half full. I really had to find that silver lining.
Like your smell, as in a big bowl of spaghetti. I like your smell more than a plate of cappelletti. The highest compliment from one who lives to eat. Those four misspoken words that leave her as red as a beet. I like your smell, said the gent as he slid closer. I like your smell, as refined as a bulldozer. The one phrase that could lead to a meaningful lifelong romance, a composer to not a chance. We don't gel, I like your smell. Skip a beat or say farewell. I like your smell. I like it. I like it. I like it. I like your smell. You smell very nice.
Listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today we've been talking about local makers. Kristen Roach, founder of Ames Collaborative Art, or Ames CART, and Amanda Feely of Essential Alchemy.
Ames CART has a blog on its website, amescart.org. They're also on Facebook. You can like their page to stay informed about the Plein Air Painting Workshop this summer and all of their other upcoming events.
Amanda also has both a website and a Facebook page. The website is essentialalchemy.com. That's essentialalchemy.com.
Reporters and producers for this show were Sarah Hegland and Greta Anderson. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison. Music we heard included Monkey See and Spunky and Clarissa by Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, Imagination by the King Sisters, and I Like Your Smell by Frank Lamphere. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, and see listings of our past guests and contact information. KHOI has a radio production training workshop. If you're interested in joining the team, call 292-2878 or go to the KHOI website.
Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.